Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to Stars Matter, a recruiting podcast from The Athletic. I'm Mitch Light, joined by Ari Wasserman. And Ari, you issued a commitment a while back, or you asked for a commitment a while back, and now you have a signing day ceremony coming up. You excited?
Yeah, we just hope she doesn't flip on the last day, you know what I mean?
Yeah, is she taking visits?
Yeah, I hope not. you never know, though, I guess. It's a long time coming, Mitch. We got a lot going on over here. I'm super excited for the wedding day. Even more excited to get back some of my days so that I can, you know, go back to being just my lovable me without having to call flower vendors and all that sort of thing. So
you're growing up. We're proud of you, Ari.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. And, you know, this, will be the last episode that we do maybe together as a single man. So let's make it count. Okay.
Okay.
This is like my bachelor party of podcasts.
Yeah, we'll try to stay out of trouble here. But
keep your shirt on.
Big show, a lot of commitments this week. It's real. Things are really picking up. Some right before we recorded as well. We're gonna revisit Ari's bold prediction for Ohio State's 2023 class and see where he stands on that now. We'll talk briefly on some collectives, and Stu Mandel had another story about that this week. We're going to highlight a couple of schools having, I guess, surprising recruiting classes, although it's still early. I think it's a really good trivia question, Ari. I might introduce it earlier because it could be a talking point for some other stuff.
Okay, yeah, let's do that. That's a good idea.
And hold on. I might ask you to explain the grape juice computer story from your freshman year in college.
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, all right.
I want to just say that I hope that one day we get into this podcast groove, and it's out of Mitch and I's control, but where we don't have to talk about collectives every week.
I'm glad you brought that up because I put briefly, like, I don't know what our listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Like, do people care? Like, it was big news when it happened, when Stu broke that story and David Ubben had the one on Tennessee, but I don't know. What do you think? Do people care, Ari?
I think people care to a certain extent when it's their favorite team. I don't know if people care about other people's collectives. Now,
one cares about your fantasy football.
Yeah. The interesting thing is that the collectives are going to be an integral part of determining the results that people care so much about. So if that's the case, you would think conventional wisdom would be that you would care about the collectives, because if one thing is impacting the other, then you want to think a lot about the thing that's impacting the thing you care about. But at the same time, it's a lot of minutiae. It's a lot of numbers. It's a lot of theory. And frankly, we can't prove anything. And people, so it's just like, if you don't know the numbers and the stats, I think people are probably more so just probably annoyed of just talking about it because there's not a lot of concrete information. And it's just like, other than what seems to be Tennessee just, you know, killing everybody right now in the world, I don't know how much we can add to it. So it's interesting to talk about values of players and stuff, but I don't think the average person cares how much a 4-star defensive tackle could be worth to random collective B. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think the word you use, it's a speculation too. We don't know. Like, if we knew, if this was like NFL free agency and we could say this guy's being paid this, and then maybe it's a little more interesting. We could compare, contrast, but we don't know. We don't know who's getting what and how, you know, how many guys are getting, but it's sort of like, it's the time we live in right now. And it's, I don't know, wild, wild west is the right term. It's crazy the first year, but so let's dive in.
You know
real
what
quick.
It kind of feels like to me? Okay. It feels like speculating on what your baby is going to look like when your wife is 3 months pregnant. It's like, you know, there's a baby, you know, there's, well, yeah, it's like you think about it, you know, it's like, but the baby isn't formed yet. So how could you possibly even know the answer to that? Because it doesn't even exist yet. And that's kind of part of it too. It's like every week there's more and more context or information of what it could look like or what it will be. But again, speculation, and it varies greatly from program to program. And the only thing that kind of really drives me insane is when coaches and administrators of programs outwardly dismiss the importance of it or say things like, we're not going to pay attention to it, or we're not going to engage in that. And just like, why are you dismissing participation in the new wave of college football before it's even started yet? To me, that's just a admission of being apprehensive to adapt. And if we've learned anything from Nick Saban and the successful programs in this country, is that adaptation is crucial to success. So we don't know exactly where each team is going to stand in 5 years and what it's going to look like in 5 years. But if I was a fan of a favorite or my favorite team's athletic director or coach said, we're not going to engage in this, I would be very upset about that.
Yeah. And Chip Kelly recently, the UCLA coach, came out and said, I think there are some places that have weaponized NIL and are using it in recruiting. That's not going to happen here. So we don't need to discuss.
Why is it? I just don't understand the word weaponized. What do you mean? Like wanting to pay people more is weaponizing it?
Just using it as a tool to recruit rather than an incentive, sort of like once the guys are here to, sort of like your Wake Forest story that you wrote, you know, to a smaller scale. Like once the guys, we want to enhance their experience at Wake Forest or UCLA or whatever the school is. Now, I will say,
but
there
the person
is
who created the Wake Forest collective doesn't view paying players as weaponizing them. I think he's just rational about what they'll be able to afford and who they'll be able
right,
to get.
Right, but I think Chip Kelly's afford. Talking about the recruiting inducements part. Now, I still think we are in a very gray area in that mm-hmm. part of it, where a lot of programs and coaches are still apprehensive about the recruiting inducements and will the NCAA at some point try and crack down on it. So we can sit here and make fun of Chip Kelly and all that, but I don't have that much fault with the way he said it. I find more fault.
I just wouldn't say it at all.
Arizona's, yeah, you're right. I find more fault with what, you know, said at Arizona State. You know, they're going to focus on development of players and, you know, getting ready, guys ready for the NFL. And you had fun with that over the weekend.
Yeah.
After what Arizona, a in-state four-star wide receiver committed to, I'm trying to think, where'd he go?
He went to Oregon.
Yeah, Oregon. That's it. And you said at least Arizona State's going to, you know, focus on developing guys for the NFL. So that was
and the person committed to Oregon, and Oregon is one of the schools that people think or speculating have been right ahead of the curve on the NIL. So it's like it wasn't just that an in-state player left Arizona. It was just also to a school that seems to be willing and able to make things happen in that realm. So, you know, it's just it's an interesting dynamic because it's just like, I don't know how you separate those two things, Mitch. It's like, oh, you can incentivize somebody to come to your school, but how are you going to stop somebody from thinking about what they might stand to make when they get somewhere? Like, you can't separate those two things. As much as the NCAA would like to say you can't induce somebody to come to your school based on NIL promises, it's just like, well, what do you think people are considering? It's the same thing that you could have made the case 3 years ago saying you can't induce somebody to come to your school for playing time. People are only in, you know, thinking about themselves and considering what they might actually be able to gain from that decision. And if it's financially, then that's part of it. Like, I honestly don't know how the NCAA would have a leg to stand on in terms of trying to come down or limit the amount of money that's being spent or how it's being spent. So, like, I think that this whole thing of NCAA involvement is kind of a funny thing to look at, because I think in 3 or 4 years it's just going to be a free-for-all, because you can't possibly sanction somebody for saying they're going to pay somebody down the road when that's part of the life decision that that person's making.
Yeah, so let's go over some notable commitments. A big one here locally, I live in Nashville, and in Tennessee got Caleb Herring, a four-star edge rusher from Murfreesboro, top 100 national player. His brother Elijah is a class of 2023 signee to Tennessee. So, you know, Tennessee has missed out on a lot of five stars, local kids in recent years. So it's important for this new staff. They got the number one player in the state to commit. Seems like there's some serious momentum for Tennessee football, Tennessee recruiting. USC just got a four-star running back, Quentin Joyner from Texas. One of the in the 2023 class, it'll lower their average player rating. Wasn't it like 99? Because I think they had like four commits and they were all five.
Yeah, stars, yeah. It's definitely going to lower it.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to talk about a couple quarterbacks I found interesting. J.J. Cole,
mm-hmm.
kid from Ankeny. Yeah, Ankeny, Iowa. You wrote about him last year when he was kind of an under-the-radar prospect. He's from the Cole kicking camp family. One thing that you remembered about the story, he has very large feet. But a four-star kid going to Iowa State and picked Iowa State over Minnesota. Just first of all, what do you remember about that story?
I remember that he comes from a kicking family, and his father, Jamie Cole, runs the Cole kicking camps and stuff. And that's the publication that is the most reliable recruiting rankings for kickers and punters and specialists. And I remember that J.J. Cole wanted to be a kicker, but they ruled him out because his feet were too big. And I think this kid has like a size 16 foot or something. It's like some Shaq-sized foot.
Is it too big of surface area? I don't understand the dynamic.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, kicking a football seems painful to me. I've never in my entire life have even attempted it, I don't think. I think I did one time and it hurt and I never did it again. So like the idea of like dedicating your life to putting a football between the uprights seems hard for me to fathom because that motion in general just seems uncomfortable. But he couldn't do it because his foot was too big. So he ended up playing quarterback and like was one of during COVID was one of the under-evaluated players at his position. And then I see now a year and a half later that he has kind of risen up and got his fourth star and now is the 324th player in the country from Ankeny, Iowa, and then goes to Iowa State. I think it's the perfect type of prospect that Iowa State has to get. You know, it's not a national recruit, but if you're a four-star quarterback in Iowa who's super talented and Iowa gets him, I think that's a huge win for the Cyclones.
Yeah, we talk a lot about in-state kids and prioritizing in-state kids. I found this interesting. So Iowa recently got a commitment from a quarterback from New Jersey, Marco Lanitz, L.A.
He's a blue chipper too, right?
Yeah. And they kind of prioritized him over J.J. Cole. And then remember a few months ago, Nebraska grabs a commitment from William Watson from Massachusetts. And Mitch Sherman wrote about Zane Flores, a up-and-coming quarterback from Gretna, Nebraska, who just committed to Oklahoma State. So you have two programs here that in Nebraska and Iowa went out of state to the East Coast and kind of prioritized those two guys over in-state kids. Not saying that's the right decision or the wrong decision, but it'll just be interesting to follow. Iowa fans will be following J.J. Cole's development at Iowa State, a guy that maybe they think they could have gotten if they prioritized him. And some Nebraska fans are saying, hey, we got this kid in-state who's going to play for Mike Gundy. Surely he's good enough to play for us. Such that the dynamics there were kind of interesting.
I'm Googling Kevin Durant's shoe size.
Yeah, don't.
Because have you seen that picture of his long foot?
Well, he infamously stepped on the line in the game 7 against Milwaukee.
Well, I mean, his foot is like longer than a foot. It's like a freakishly long foot. And honestly speaking, if you believe in God or you don't believe in God, I don't even know what I believe. But there is no possible way that a human body could be put on earth to play basketball or to be formed in a way that Kevin Durant's body was formed. And Mitch is a big Nets fan, but like I was watching him during warmups the other day and like his arms are basically dragging on the floor, like the wingspan, his foot size. And the reason why I bring this up though, is because J.J. Cole's, he wears a size 18 shoe.
Wow.
Which is like, I don't even know what that means. Is that like twice my foot if I wear a 10? Like, I mean, like think about that. What do you wear?
11.
Okay, put your feet together and like look at it. I think it might be that. That's how long Kevin Durant's foot is. J.J. Cole's foot is 16.
So you think it's like a big men they say have struggle free throw shooting because their hands are too big? Do you think that's the same dynamic?
I'll read the quote from the story that I wrote a year and a half ago. He said that at some point. That's why there's no errors in it. The quote is that it made the decision for me not to kick pretty easily because he didn't have a decision. And Jamie said that most NFL kickers wear size 12 or smaller. Coles could have had all the instruction in the world, but simply put, his foot was too big to kick the ball off the ground at the highest level. Cole has kicking in his blood. His body, however, did not cooperate. So I don't know.
Push punts. He'll be great pooch punt third down.
I guess there is some sort of mechanism with the way that you're supposed to launch the ball off the floor that a big foot gets in the way of. So I don't know. just knowing nothing about kicking, I can just tell that having a size 16 foot would make that more difficult.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense.
So now Iowa State's got a big foot quarterback.
Big footed quarterback. Quarterback.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, don't look it up. Do you know who has the number one recruiting class in the class of 23 right now?
Notre Dame.
Texas Tech.
What, did that happen?
It's been a couple days.
It
15
has?
Commits. They've got 15 commits. The next most is 10 with Arkansas. Tech's average player rating is 87.71. Mm-hmm. Last year's transitional class under Joey McGuire was 86.48. In 2021, it was 86.44. So going up a full point, that's a pretty big jump. So they're definitely getting a better quality of player. This will not last. It's more like a top 15, top 20 class, don't you? With those numbers, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of teams like Alabama's 27th, Clemson's 28th. OU's 23,
oh, yeah.
Texas is 31.
I wasn't trying to say
but I'm saying is like if you go back and you look at like last year's final rankings, you can get a good indication of where that would probably land.
Yes.
87, like 87 is in the late 20s or the low 20s for that ranking. So, you know, it's great that Texas Tech has filled their class basically with 15 commits, but they probably got like 7 to 10 more to go. I would love to see if McGuire can sprinkle in like a random top 100 Texas player to like make the icing on the cake a little bit better.
They've got some 4 stars.
They do have some 4 stars. I have the class in front of me. The highest rated player. It's funny to me too, because it's like 15 commitments and all 15 are from Texas, which is the exact blueprint of what Tech is trying to do right there. But they have two top 200 players, Isaiah Crawford from Post, Texas, number 162 overall, and Brendan Jordan, Mansfield, Texas, number 181. So I don't know what they were like their best rated player was in 2022, but that's probably in line with what Tech has been doing from an upside percent. Well, actually, no, Texas Tech's highest rated player in last year's class was 434. So there is improvement there. And it's absolutely... The thing that I'm more excited about with Texas Tech, more so than the actual ranking or where they wind up this year, I don't know that I find that fascinating, because if they end up between 27 and 40, like whatever. What I'm excited about is seeing whether or not Texas Tech is inexplicably awesome in 3 years, because Joey McGuire knows every single high school coach in Texas and is signing undervalued players that we don't appreciate are undervalued right now.
Great point.
That to me is going to be the thing to track. But
there's trust. There's a two-way trust there.
Yeah. I mean, I covered...
Between him and the high school coaches.
I covered one of the biggest juggernauts in college football for 10 years and some of their best players that they've ever had. Heisman Trophy winner wouldn't even have been on the team if Urban Meyer were the head coach, because there isn't a trust issue that you have. Like Troy Smith is a 3-star throw-in that Jim Tressel like took Ted Ginn Jr.'s father's word for it and said, take this kid, he's going to be good. And the guy won the Heisman. And I think that there's a little bit of element of that that isn't really prevalent in the top 10 classes anymore because it's so concentrated at the top now. Like if you go look, I think it'd be an interesting story if you like researched basements of the top classes in the country. Like between 2010 and 2015, I bet you there would be more three-star prospects on average in those classes than there are at the bottom half of the classes that are at the top now, which means that there's less risks being taken on the undervalued gems and more opportunity for teams like Texas Tech and other in-state schools in talent-rich areas to annex the Troy Smiths of the world that would have at one point ended up at the powerhouses but now no longer have room for them. Because there's so many top 100 players taking up their spots. So certainly interesting. And I watched Moneyball last night and I was super inspired by it. Have you seen that movie?
You'd seen it before, right?
Yeah. I just watched it again because I was bored and it was on. And
I've seen it. I saw it when it came out. I saw it in the past.
And I thought that there was a valuable lesson in that movie. And it's just like you can gain the numbers and you can do what you can. Baseball is a very different game than football. I get that. It's statistically driven way more than the physical nature of football. But there is only so far that you can go to game the system. And I think that what's interesting is that that also like rings true to the college football versions of that that we've come to love so much, like the Iowa States 2 years ago or the Wisconsins or the Northwesterns or the teams that typically don't recruit top level on paper classes but seem to outperform them, still have that Oakland A's dropped in the divisional round of the playoffs ceiling. And the way that you transcend that, I think, in the past, if you were a team that doesn't have the big market, for lack of a better term, advantage in college football, is to get these undervalued gems. And now that the Oakland A's or the Texas Techs aren't really competing as much with the Yankees and the Red Sox of the college football world, is that maybe they'll be able to go out and get the Hattiebergs or whatever you can, that teams that are recruiting 15 top 100 players in a single class just simply don't have room for anymore.
Yeah. And we, Sam Kahn wrote about this in his kind of behind the scenes on SMU building its recruiting staff. And this isn't unique to SMU, but a lot of recruiting departments that they scour the internet looking for fast track and field times 100 times. And that they won't, there's certain line of demarcation where they want a kid under that, then they'll do some more research. They'll dive in. They might take a kid who's only played football for 1 year, who's raw because he's got that speed, where Texas A&M doesn't need to take that chance, but a school like SMU or Texas Tech might take it.
Yeah. And if you take the chance a lot, your team's going to suck. But if you take it the right amount and you hit on a few of them, you're going to be really awesome. So like, there's this like weird, it's like such a weird thing to do, because you're on one hand, you're saying, well, the big time teams just don't have time for risks as much as they used to with three-star prospects that aren't getting recruited at a high level. So they're not going to be as good. And it's like, well, if the reason for that is because they're just getting proven awesome players instead, then there's no need to find the under the radar gems, because you're getting really good players. Under the radar gems are really good for programs that need them. So
right. Here's a good example. I remember when Bobby Johnson was at Vanderbilt, he got an offensive lineman from Baton Rouge named Chris Williams, really tall, skinny, raw kid, developed into a first round pick of the Bears. And all Vanderbilt fans, whenever they get a commitment, oh, you know, Chris Williams was a low three star. Well, how many other low three stars did they take who didn't pan out? So it's
it's probably one out of five.
Right, exactly. So they're fun. Every program loves to, every coaching staff, every program fan base loves to brag about those three stars who develop. But it's not good practice to take five or six, you know, flyers.
Also, everybody likes to talk about how awesome it was that Jordan Davis was a three-star prospect. And that's great. What an awesome under-the-cover gem Georgia had. If Jordan Davis's career never panned out and he sucked, there would be a five-star person waiting to play right behind him. So you have a larger runway for error when you have really good rosters to kind of take these risks. The problem is that there are a lot of teams that find themselves in a position that they have to rely on these risks. And when these risks don't pan out and you're relying on them, then you have a major hole in your team and then thus you suck. So there is a balance there. I'm just saying there's probably more opportunity than ever for a person like McGuire at Texas Tech in the state of Texas to land undervalued players that are a lot better than their rankings indicate, which means that they probably, and it would not surprise me if they won the Big 12 after Texas and Oklahoma leave.
All right, let's real quick on Louisville. We've mentioned them in the past. I don't think we talked about Louisville in the first 4 or 5 months that we did this show, but they continue to have success in California. They got a top 150 cornerback, Aaron Williams. Louisville has 9 commitments now. Class is ranked 7. 4 players from California, including the top 3 in the class. So that's not one of those pipelines that you think about, Ari. Louisville to California, but they're doing something right there. I don't know if it's a collective issue or whatever, but this is a important class for Scott Satterfield, and we've talked about it. They have not been recruiting the state or region necessarily well. So, hey, let's go out to California, get some players. It appears to be working right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the fun thing about that is that when it's working, it's awesome. The downside to that is that if a pipeline gets shut off, then you're in trouble, because I think Kentucky is winning the Kentucky battle. And yes, that is all well and good right now for Louisville that they're doing that. But I also don't know that I would feel great about being
not exactly
second,
sustainable.
Yeah, model. A sustainable model. So also, too, Pierce Clarkson is a very eccentric young man who likes going to visits and likes his Twitter account. And that's I would shoot. Be very, very shocked if he doesn't take other visits. So it's going to be very interesting to watch this manifest, because when you do have somebody who's from California, who's in the Elite 11, who has an offer from Oregon and Virginia Tech and, you know, a bunch of other different places like Kentucky and Arizona State and Arizona and places closer to home, that, you know, and that's not nothing against the young man. I would probably behave the same exact way if I were him. But when you like the recruiting process a lot, you might not be as willing to shut it down when all the fireworks begin. So, you know, and it's much harder for Louisville to keep somebody from California to stay committed. So very curious to see how it pans out, but certainly a great start for them right now.
Are you ready for the photo shoots at your wedding? Are you going to ride a horse like in Oklahoma State?
Britt got me on a horse in Cabo once, and I couldn't walk right the rest of the night. So I'm not going to be going back on a horse for a while. So our wedding is like super expensive because the venue is very expensive. But we didn't do anything nuts that most people do at their weddings, like with a live band or a cake or a ice sculpture of a golf bag. Like, we didn't do any of that stuff. And I think that we're just relying on one of Britt's friends, who's also a photographer, to take some pictures for 25 minutes during the night, and then that's it. So great venue, okay. Great venue. Wedding was the corners were cut at a lot of places because we wanted to let the ocean. How much?
I'm not asking how much.
I was going to say, whoa, bud.
I was going to say, it's a personal question. How much time are you allotting for Landis's toast?
45 minutes.
45 minutes.
What's crazy is that Landis and I are going to be driving from Laguna Beach to Phoenix at the same time, because we're both leaving Monday morning, but not together. But I'm going to make sure that I can tail behind him.
Yeah.
Maybe let his wife now. Wow. What happens when you get a shotgun wedding. People forget you got married. I'm going to make his wife drive their car, and Landis is going to ride with me. That's, and then we're going to tail his wife.
That's really what you want, right? Yeah. You would rather drive with Bill. I know you love Britt.
Well, Britt's not driving with me. Britt's flying back from California.
Okay.
Britt's flying to Texas with her mom back to Texas, and I'm coming to the summit. That's how I'm spending the first day of me being married. The next day, I'm going to be in a car with Landis, I hope.
That's awesome. Speaking of Bill Landis,
Dollaby,
Ohio State, 2 commitments last week. 4-star cornerback from Tampa, Dijon Johnson, ranked 270 nationally, 29 quarterback, and a 3-star, high 3-star wide receiver from Florida, Zephyrsville, Florida, Bryson Rogers, 364. First of all, what in the hell is going on with Brian Hartline? They took a receiver who's not ranked in the top 100.
Yeah, I guess there's 2 ways to
look. So this guy's going to be a first round pick, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's just like funny. There's 2 ways to look at Ohio State's class. There's like the negative way, which is how I tend to look at it.
Your approach.
Yeah. Right. And my approach is, if you made the banner of their website of 247's or Ohio State's 247 page blue and white and then redacted the names, you would have a Penn State class. That's what I look at right now. I see 9 commitments and I see 1 top 100 player. And if you remember on this podcast before the year started, I said I'm very curious about how Ohio State's going to do this year because they have a very light class of players in Ohio, and nationally it's going to be more of a challenge than it's been in the past. And so far it looks like they're going to be finishing the class in the 5 to 7 range.
You make a lot of bets on the pot with Andy. Let's make a bet here.
But I don't want to bet because it's like Ohio State could just get like six top 100 players in 2 months.
You just texted me the other day. You said their class is going to be outside the top five. Are you going to back that up?
No. I think they'll probably finish five if I had to guess. Okay. But five is outside of where they should be. Did I say they're going to be outside the top five in the text? Because that's not... So. I don't mean that.
Okay.
But I think I'm on high alert that Ohio State's class is going to look like Texas's class from last year, which is number five overall nationally in four top 100 players and distinctly behind the top four, which would be a complete disaster for them.
Now, I know kids don't necessarily think this way, or maybe they do, but you're Bryson Rogers. You're a wide receiver, and you've seen the level to which Ohio State recruits that position. That's got to be a nice boost for your ego.
Oh, Brian Hartline for sure. And Ryan Day. What do you mean they don't think that way? Of course it is.
Yeah. Think that you at 364 are basically they think he's a top 100 player.
Listen, so you're gonna get rankings bumps too. Let's not Bryson Rogers is a three-star prospect ranked number 364 nationally. His offers are Alabama, Florida State, Georgia, Maryland, Miami, Michigan, Michigan State, Missouri, Nebraska, Oregon, Penn State, Tennessee, Virginia Tech, Washington, and West Virginia, and a bunch of other ones that I skipped over because they suck. So I think that it's probably within the realm of rationality to think that this kid is a little bit better than his rating indicates. And I think a lot of people will say if and when Ohio State gets some ratings bumps that it's bull and 247 has it out for the big programs, and you'll hear all the same. But if you look at the two players that Ohio State did just land, they both have Alabama offers. So like that to me, like more so, like if I see a high ranking, I take it for what it's worth, because if they're highly rated, there's a reason for it. And if they're not, the first thing I go look at is their offers list. And I was just like, these commitments don't really make sense. And I looked at their offers list. I was like, oh, okay, I get it. So we'll see where they end up. But Ohio State's class has nine players in it. And four of them are from Ohio. Four of them are from Florida. And one of them's from Tennessee. The four from Florida, none of them are in the top 25 players in Florida. So you have a situation where Ohio State is basically maxed out with Ohio talent going into the program this year. They might get one more commitment, which would bring them to five. They haven't made a scratch in the top end of the rankings, at least in the state of Florida. And there's no secondary recruiting territory that will be easy for them. So will they sign 7 to 10 top 100 players? I think that it's possible. But I also know that they're probably only going to sign 22 guys this year, and they have nine commitments already, which means that every single commitment that they take for the rest of the cycle has to be from a top 100 player, which is going to be really hard to do in order for them to be in that same realm. And the way I explained it on the Ohio State show is, I don't know if the ranking is more important, is as important, like where they finish in the ranking, because you can finish in the top... You can finish in the top five and still have a below average or a miss of a class if you're Ohio State. But what I think you want is to make sure that you are in the realm of teams that have an average player ranking of 93 or above. Like if you go look at the 2022 final standings, you have Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State, all of whom signed multiple five-star prospects and had really high average player ratings. Then you look at five, Texas, and below, and there's a 3-point drop in average player rating from five down. So I don't know where Ohio State needs to end for it to be considered a successful season or cycle, but it has to be in the top tier or I'm going to rake them. So, and I already have the column written
Ryan
in my
Day,
head.
Ryan Day, you have been warned.
No, I mean, it's just like there's a standard at Ohio State, and signing a Penn State class is not that standard, even if that class happens to finish number five.
Can we work on the headline? Ryan Day, you're not at Penn State.
Isn't Penn State.
Yeah. We are not Penn State.
Could you imagine the comment section?
There we go.
I wrote a story and the headline is "You are not Penn State," like what would happen to me? If you think about all the comments I always get.
I would... So I listened to the beginning of your Ohio State spring draft pod with Landis, where you kicked his ass in the draft. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't share this with you because I gave him a draft strategy next time, because he took Stroud and then you had some of the other better premier players. He should have taken Kyle McCord and Devin Brown with his next two picks, leaving you without a quarterback, and then it wouldn't matter. His team would be better. What do you think of that strategy?
But we only did 22 rounds and you had to fill out your team.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So your strategy's gone. Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be cool if I just took an offensive lineman on every pick.
Well, no, you could put Devin Brown could play.
Devin Brown could play corner.
Yeah.
CJ Stroud could be left tackle and you'd be good. Yeah, that's a good strategy. Yeah. I think what he messed up on was going snake, not letting us go snake. Because he went every other and then he took one player and then I didn't have to take my player to the last pick of the draft and I got the next two picks.
Yeah. So it's kind of embarrassing for Ohio State beat writer to get his ass kicked in an Ohio State
draft.
Well,
I mean, we're about a year removed away from me being more removed from it, but I know most of the players on that team still.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Yeah. Do you know where Washington Courthouse, Ohio is?
I do. I've been there.
Where is it?
It's like Southwestern.
Okay. I just, because Kentucky got a commitment from a tight end from Washington Courthouse, number 504 nationally, Tanner LeMaster. And I just thought that was like the quintessential.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Stoops, Ohio.
Yeah. Like, it's like on the way to Dayton.
From scratch. Yeah. But that's like a tight end. Not a 4-star, but a really solid 3-star from Ohio. Yeah, that's basically how he got rolling.
That's the exact player the Big Ten is built off of, or used to be built off of. And now Kentucky's winning 9 games a year with those guys. Good for them.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the trivia. We've got other stuff to go, but I think the trivia could lead to some more talk. And I know maybe some other people have researched this and spit out these numbers in a different format here, but over the last 5 years, basically I looked at every 5-star in the 247 commit over the last 5 years and divvied them up by states. Can you, I don't know the best way to ask the question. Okay, what are the top 6 states of producing 5-stars over the last 5 years in order?
That was a lot of information for a very straightforward question, and I'm kind of confused.
Yeah, I know. I just had this data down. I didn't really write a question.
Okay, I'm going to look at the United States map. Am I allowed to do that? Okay.
Yeah, I can. You can't picture a map in your head?
I can, but if I start naming them off, I'll lose track. Okay, so basically the best talent-producing states?
A 5-star talent. Last 5 years.
Florida?
Not 2023.
Florida?
I went 2020. Florida is third.
Texas?
Texas is first with 27.
Georgia
is second with 25. Florida is third with 21.
So I said Texas, Georgia, and Florida, right?
You got the top three, but not in the right order. Okay. Or whatever. Good job.
Okay, so it's 1, 2, and 3?
Yes.
Okay, so then California?
Yes, but a huge drop. This was surprising. Maybe it shouldn't have been. Florida was third at 21. California is fourth at 11.
Yeah.
Does that surprise you?
No, a little bit.
We know it's not producing as, but it's a pretty big state.
Yeah, it's a pretty big state, but I feel like the northern half of it isn't as, I don't know. Florida is like football through and through, and I don't know California. There's some surfing going on out there. Texas is just a huge state mass, like for land that's obsessed with football, so that makes sense. But is the surprise the fifth? Is that what's like?
Okay. No, okay. There's 4 that we just mentioned. There's 2 that are tied for 5. And then there's 3 that are tied in the next
for 5-star talent.
Yeah. So there's two more.
Okay.
After California, it was 11.
Are they obvious? The
one of them you should get. The other one.
Louisiana.
No.
Pennsylvania.
No.
Tennessee.
No.
One I should get.
One of them you should get. The other one makes sense once you think about
North Carolina.
Because of. No. Should I give it?
Alabama?
Used to live in one of the states.
Ohio?
Yeah. 7.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. That must have been a good run for Ohio.
Yeah. Now think of a state which you might not normally think of, but they've had a good run of elite talent.
Like, that's why I was guessing North Carolina and stuff.
Yeah. You'll be like, ah, that makes sense.
So it's not Massachusetts is what you're saying.
No, of course not. Massachusetts will be on top of this list in a few years.
Jersey?
No, South Carolina.
South Carolina. I wouldn't have gotten that one.
Okay, there's three that have six. Those two have seven. There's three that have six. You have mentioned two of them already.
Okay, well, we don't have to. I've already named them, so you can just tell.
Louisiana, North Carolina, and Virginia each have six.
Okay.
Then there's four with five. Alabama, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Washington, our favorite topic.
I should have said Washington just to make a point of the...
Well, listen, I was going to bring it up before when you were talking about Ohio State, that they, you know, class of 21, they had 2 5-star kids from Washington. That really helps your class.
Yeah.
There's four that have three: Arizona, Michigan, Mississippi, and Tennessee. The ones with two: DC, which isn't a state, but you know, Illinois, Nevada, and New Jersey and Oklahoma. And then these have one: Kentucky, Missouri, Utah, West Virginia, Wisconsin. And by the way, I did not just put all of the IMG kids in Florida. I looked them up to see where they're actually from.
Oh, okay. So you took the IMG kids out of Florida.
Yes, yes.
Well, that's an astute thing for you to do.
Because there's a decent amount, obviously. And like, for instance, like here's one too. Like Luther Burden, who's going to Missouri this year. We think of him as a St. Louis product, but he's from Illinois.
So, well, who did you give him to? Who would you give him to? I would still give him to Missouri, I think.
He doesn't live in Missouri. He's from Illinois. I grew up in New Jersey, right across the river. I grew up in New Jersey, not New York. Would you put me in New York?
I mean, that's a little bit different. Because
why?
St. Louis is the city that person grew up in, regardless of where his house was situated.
I grew up in Illinois. Went to high school in Illinois.
Have you been to that area? You literally could, like, it's like a 6-minute drive from downtown.
Right.
So if you ask him where he's from, he will say St. Louis.
He's from
Illinois. I know he lives in Illinois.
If he's got any state pride, he'd say he's from Illinois.
Is it East St. Louis? Is that what his city's called?
I believe it's from East St. Louis.
Yeah, East St. Louis is like saying, it's like being from any regular suburb of a city. And if he identifies, if St. Louis is a property of Missouri in terms of the game of recruiting risk, if Missouri's entire existence as a program is predicated on owning St. Louis, and Luther Burden identifies as a person from St. Louis, then that is a Missouri prospect to me. Like, I don't view him as Illinois. Like, Illinois has to make sure they get that guy. Like,
of course not. But he's from Illinois.
This is, by the way, anybody listening to this, is how me and him argue about editing my stories every day. I say something that is a fact, and then it's not 100% actual. It's like, no, it's, I say something that everybody understands, but it's not technically a fact. So Mitch has to pull the thread of it until there's nothing left.
But you say something that's technically not good grammar, and then I have to technically fix it.
Yeah, technically.
Yeah. You want to talk collectives for a minute?
Sure.
No. Okay. I'm sorry I'm boring you.
Well, you said collective, so I
spread myself. Yeah. So Stu Mandel had a story today, tapping into some of his sources in that field. And he reported, I believe Stu saw contracts for a 4-star wide receiver, $1 million over his career. A top 10 defensive lineman was a 3-year deal worth $1 million. I guess he's just assuming he's going to leave early. And then a 3-star defensive lineman, $500,000 over the 4 years. That's what interests me. Like the 5-star kids and the quarterbacks, we're going to see a ton of money. How deep does this market go? Like a 3-star defensive lineman. Evidently, there's a market for him.
What was the dollar amount? $100,000?
No, $500,000
for a 3-star offensive lineman?
Yeah, over 4 years. 3-star defensive lineman. No thoughts?
I don't know. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if it's... Sometimes I like to think eventually the money's going to run out, and then sometimes I think that's a stupid way to look at it. Because I think that we underestimate how much money there is in college football booster world and how much money these people want to spend. So...
I waffle back.
If you think about $500,000, like what it would take for me and you to make $500,000, what would the obligations?
A couple of savvy bets on your part,
yeah,
right?
Well, you know, NBA playoffs are started, so we're riding.
Did you bet on the Nets?
I'm going to be betting on my wedding day, just so you know.
Can I bet on whether or not the wedding goes through?
Sure.
What are the odds there?
I think that they're pretty high, because what is she going to do? Leave me at the altar and then return to our house and then raise our child together. Kids. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, what are we?
You're in a pretty
she's
good
already
spot.
Like, I don't leverage. Know if she wants to get married, but she basically has to at this point because she already, yeah. you know, like everybody always says, are you nervous to get married? I was like, I've already made the biggest commitment a human being can make, because even if she hates me or she doesn't want to see me ever again, she has no choice but for the next 18 years to be in my life in some regard. Like, there's yeah. no getting away from each other. So might as well just give it a whirl and see how it goes, you know? And in 5 years, goes, she changed yeah. her mind. You know, it's no different than what's already would have
you,
to
you
happen.
You can transfer now without sitting out.
Like, I don't she even know, like, if you yeah. if you aren't married, because we've been living for 6 months with our bank accounts together, or almost a year now. I don't know. It's been a while. Like, if her and I were like, we're not getting married, I wouldn't even know where to begin to divvy up the money now, because it's been like, it's so cross-pollinated now.
Right. One of my wife's teacher friends, they've been married for like 25 years. She just found this out. They have separate bank accounts. How weird is that?
I've got friends that have separate bank accounts. I think it's really? Fine. Yeah. I mean, if it works for you, it works for you. That's my thing. I think it's weird because I wouldn't want to be going to dinner with my wife in 4 years and having to decide who's paying for it.
Yeah. Just what's mine like, is yours. What's
yeah.
yours is
yeah.
Mine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, money complicates things. I get it. On the podcast that I recorded with Bill Landis earlier in the day, we talked about whether or not.
Oh, I thought the draft was the last one.
No, we did one today.
There's another one coming.
I'm okay. banging out podcasts before I hit the road today. So I only have one responsibility while I'm driving.
Write the story.
Yes. Write a long story about a subject I know nothing about. I also,
look forward to editing it.
Yeah. Yeah. But good luck editing it. Yeah. Seriously. It's yeah. going to be, you know what? You better prepare yourself. Coming. Okay. Yeah. But
I think dumpster fire is the
Landis
word.
Landis and I'm going to try to do a good job. Started our podcast that we recorded on April 19th, the day that an hour before we did this one, about whether or not you can marry your second cousin. So that's we spent 5 minutes on that.
Like the legality of it, or
because I went to get my marriage certificate with Britt last week, and I was surprised at how fast it was. Like, you go there, you give them your driver's license, and then you sign a paper and it's over with. But they ask you a series of questions that I was not prepared for. Like, one was, are you guys related by blood? And I was like, do you get people answering that in the affirmative a lot here? And she goes, you would be surprised. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I had like this thought about like, what is actually a blood relative? A blood relative of somebody who actually shares your blood, like your parents' blood.
Yeah.
So if your cousin, like my dad's brother's son is my cousin, but my dad's brother's wife has no relation to my family whatsoever. So
right.
his wife's sister's daughter, I could marry.
You could. Would you want to?
No, I've never met her. She seems like a nice young lady. I'm just saying, I don't think that.
Where did Landis stand on this?
He said he's okay with that. As long as there's no, okay. He said it may or may not have happened in his family. And
he's defensive.
Yes. And we were laughing about it because like on the surface, it sounds weird, but I have no more or less relation to that girl that I just described, my cousin's cousin, than I would any random person.
Right. Like, what if you met her randomly?
Yeah, and we just fell in love. I wouldn't judge somebody for doing that.
Yeah, you would.
I don't know. I don't think I would. But I'm happy to report on this podcast and the Ohio State podcast that Britt and I are not related yet.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
We have a child who's related by our blood, but me and her are completely separate families.
Is your child right now wearing a headband?
Yeah.
Okay. Just part of the look, right?
That's weird. I don't know why okay. you think that's weird.
Every picture I see, she's got a headband.
Doesn't every female baby have a headband on?
Zoe didn't put. I don't think Zoe wore.
Headband. It's like a way of making a baby that's still growing their hair out look feminine.
Yeah, that's what Heather said, because I showed the picture and I said she's always wearing a headband and said she's a little lady.
Yeah, I think she's cute.
I think Heather was. Yeah,
she's we spent $7,000 on headbands.
That's
I'm totally that's a kidding. Lot of money. Okay,
I know. Right. I know. I wouldn't be shocked. Well. I know you got to go soon. You got a lot going on, but you told me a very funny story the other day.
Am I allowed to the curse on this podcast?
Sure. The grape juice computer story from your freshman. You're back at Tucson, Arizona. A young freshman, Ari. What happened?
I'm actually going to be in Tucson in 2 days, so I missed talking to Jed Fish in person.
Ah,
which would have made the story.
So a little backdrop on the story, because I texted Ari after the Nets. Celtics game one. I just said I needed a hug. And you knew what I meant right away. And I said, I had to control myself watching.
I had the Nets plus four, so I was in a good spot.
My son's girlfriend was over watching the game with us. So I couldn't sit there. I said I had to control myself. I couldn't lash out with F-bombs left and right. And you said, why not?
Why not?
And then you proceeded to tell me the grape juice story.
When I was a freshman or sophomore in college, which was, believe it or not, man, 10 years ago. No. Shit, like 12 years ago. 13 yeah, years
I
ago.
I was a freshman 30 years ago.
My dad bought me a brand new Mac laptop so I could be a sports writer and have a computer to work on in the press box. And it was those Macs that were white. Remember the back in the day when they were white?
Yeah.
And I got this computer, and then shortly after I got this computer, I accidentally spilt grape juice on it. I don't even know why I had grape juice in my dorm.
Yeah, why did you get grape juice?
I don't know if it was Passover.
Was it grape juice and vodka or something?
It was legitimately grape juice.
Okay. White grape juice or purple?
Come on, man. Who am I? If you get white grape juice, I don't know, like why would you, if you're sitting in the grocery aisle and you're looking at grape juice and you see white and purple, why would you pick white?
I think my mom used to get that like on Jewish holidays.
The white one?
Yeah, well, people have wine.
You're supposed to get the purple one so it mirrors wine.
Maybe.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. Okay. I was afraid to call my father because I have ruined a lot of his belongings throughout my upbringing.
This is probably like at least $1,500 back
then, right? Yeah, it's $1,000, I think, back then, which was a shit ton of money for a dumbass college kid who just wanted a computer to write stories on that had a lot more grammatical errors back then than they do now. So I had my college girlfriend at the time.
God help your teachers.
Call my father. And this is why this was what reminded me, because you said you didn't want to curse in front of your son's girlfriend. And I said, will you please just call my father? I said to her, will you please call my father and just tell him what happened so I don't have to deal with this? And I don't know why I did that.
So brave.
I have no idea why I did that to her, but I did. And so she called. I'm
guessing the relationship didn't last long.
We lasted like 3.5 years, which is a long time for a college relationship.
Yeah.
Called my dad and said, Mr. Wasserman, and if you have children in the car, this would be a time to turn it down. She goes, I have some really bad news for you, which I don't think she should have started it that way.
Right.
And my father, unprompted, said, and I quote, holy fucking fuck. You're not fucking pregnant, are you? And she was mortified because that wasn't the and like, and also welcome to how my dad would have handled it if that did happen. And then she goes, no, Ari broke his computer. And it actually turned out great because he was relieved.
She oversold it. Yeah.
So it's like something terrible could have happened. And then it was just replacing the computer, which kind of like brought him down a little bit. And I think he was relieved. My parents, who have supported me through thick and thin my entire life, got me a new computer. And here I am doing this podcast with you happily ever after. But my dad has made off-color jokes like that to every significant other that I've ever had since the beginning of my life. So
does Brick it along with your...
Yeah. I mean, she's still kind of, you know, getting to know him a little bit, you know. But yeah, we're all having fun over here. My parents and her mom and, you know, we got a nice little family here now. So, but I love my father very much. He's taught me to be what I think is a good man. He has never been one to censor himself. We used to listen to like Jackie Martling comedy when I was like in fourth grade in the car.
Explains a lot.
Which was like Howard Stern's right-hand man and told the dirtiest jokes I've ever heard in my entire life. Like, this is what I was like listening to on the way to elementary school. He bought me a Tupac record when I was like 6 years old. You know, those CD Walkmans back in the day that used to run with, used to go around your ears. Yeah. I was listening to like All Eyes on Me on the way to elementary school.
Just show a little more discretion with Liv.
Actually, I've been pretty bad about that. So I gotta do my best to not. It's just my theory is that everybody curses all the time in everyday walk of life, and I feel like making them not say it or glorifying the word makes it more tempting for them to say it when they find out.
I don't know if everyone does.
Everybody in my life does.
Heather doesn't swear.
But if you talk to people in a business setting, a lot of them swear. Like, swearing isn't like... Swearing is such a much bigger deal in middle school than it is in the world.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my life lesson on how to parent.
Yeah. Well, all right, we got to go, but I'm proud of you, Ari.
Thanks, bud.
You're growing up. You're growing
up. Sorry for making you upset yesterday.
Are you, though?
Yeah. I felt bad.
Okay. All right, we've moved on. Next time I see you, well, the first time I ever see you will be in a couple of weeks.
I'll get my paws on you.
College football summit. You give me a big hug and you'll be married at that point. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, this is going to be a great time. I'm actually looking forward to it. I know most people go
Enjoy. I know you're stressed, but enjoy it.
I will enjoy it once State of the Program's over with. I'm going to be driving in the middle of the desert tomorrow, and I have to pull over at 9:30 Pacific time to talk to Jed Fish on the phone.
The head coach of your alma mater?
Yeah.
You should love
that. Bear down, Arizona. Bear down, red and blue. Bear down, Arizona. Hit them hard, let them know who's... Isn't that the weakest fight song in the history of college athletics? And then they're playing USC and they've got the dun 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 dun. Like, who's going to win?
you singing it makes it slightly better.
Yes, yes. Well,
that's a highlight of the pod.
Next week or 2 weeks from now.
Are you going to join us?
I'm going to try. I'm bringing my microphone. Andy is going to replace me on next week's show, but I will try to join you if I'm around because I do miss you and I will try my best.
And then 2 weeks, we're going to plan on recording a live episode. Not live, like we're going to record it together.
Together, in person, sitting next to each other. So I'm going to bring my mic. Yeah. I'm going to have my computer, obviously, because I was not relieved of any work duties during my wedding week. And
that is so incorrect. You were assigned a story 2 months ago, which you didn't do. Mm-hmm. We probably shouldn't air our dirty laundry here.
Yeah. I'm a bad employee. He's a terrible boss. We'll catch you next week on Stars Matter.